We've had reporters out in the field all day watching as voters head to the polls. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The reaction from those voting in both the presidential and local elections have not been predictable. Steve Schrack of Langhorne, Bucks County, is not usually a staunch Republican, but he voted for the straight GOP ticket this year.
Toomey, I've always believed in Toomey, and I think that he does a good job. And just like myself, I'm not a party line guy, and he's not either, so that's why I voted for him.
Lindy Jones is a Democrat from Langhorne who used to vote Republican. That's until the GOP shut down the government in protest of the Affordable Care Act. That led her to vote for the Democrat running for Congress.
I voted for Santa Sierra. You know, I feel like he'll do a good job. I mean, there's been a lot of smear ads about him, but I voted for him anyway. But they were good smear ads. We enjoyed watching the Fitzpatrick ads, but we voted for Santa Sierra anyway.
Voters have some very unusual reasons for casting ballots in presidential candidates. Christy O'Shaughnessy from Princeton, New Jersey, voted for Donald Trump, saying even if Clinton wins, she wants the margin of victory to be small.
For the next 4 years that she's in office, I want her thinking, 2016, I got lucky. I got to run against the crazy guy. 2020, I'm probably not going to be so lucky. I'm going to have to run against someone more moderate, more electable.
Susan McCall, a Democrat from the Brewery Town section in Philly, was a lot less subtle about what she thinks about Donald Trump.
I voted for history's sake and for the better candidate. I don't think he's qualified to run this country because he's not qualified to run his own life, obviously.
Former Bernie Sanders supporter Shanice Ellison from the East Oak Lane section of Philadelphia voted for Hillary, but mainly voted out of civic pride.
Just want to come out, do my civic duty, make sure that things go the way I hope they would. But if they don't, then I'll just have to be understanding of this country's democratic process.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davis has been moving around Philly today, visiting polling places and talking with Republican and Democratic officials. He joins us now to share some of what he's learned. Now, Dave, many were wondering what kind of turnout we'd see in Philadelphia, whether Democrats are enthusiastic enough about their candidates. So what have you found?
Well, I think the enthusiasm is a little bit bigger than I expected, Dave. You know, Philadelphia really does matter in any Democratic strategy in Pennsylvania. They need to win big in Philadelphia to withstand the Republican votes that will be counted elsewhere in the state. While I was at the headquarters of Bob Brady, the chairman of the Democratic Party today, Nancy Pelosi called on his cell phone because she wants to know, how is Philly doing? This matters to everybody in the Democratic Party. And I often am a little skeptical when people tell me they're seeing big turnout. Today, I heard it from enough people in enough places to believe that I think it is quite a robust turnout in the city.
And if we can believe it, what does a robust turnout portend?
Well, I think it's very good news for Hillary Clinton and very good news for Katie McGinty, the U.S. Senate candidate. You know, I think there has been an enthusiasm gap of sorts. You know, Trump's supporters are so vociferous and committed and been showing up in big numbers at rallies. I've sensed a little bit more of a growth in Democratic enthusiasm in recent weeks. I was at the rally last night on Independence Mall. 33,000 people, they think. I talked to, 15, 20 people coming in, and I asked them, why were you here? None of them mentioned the musical acts, you know, Bon Jovi or Springsteen. They were there because they were committed. So I think there's some enthusiasm. The other thing is that the Hillary Clinton field organization really is as sprawling and effective, I think, as we were told it would be. You just see them everywhere. They're hitting doors. They had big events over the weekend, and I think that's making a difference.
Let's address voting issues. Donald Trump warned that votes might be stolen in Philadelphia. Democrats went to court to head off a Republican voter suppression effect. Are we seeing signs of either?
Not really, Dave. I think votes get stolen in every election in small numbers, and I think we're seeing a handful of problems around the city today. I spent some time at the Republican headquarters in Philadelphia this morning up on Cottman Avenue, and they were troubled by the fact that some of their watchers and inspectors were excluded from democratically dominated areas where they should have been allowed in, over 30, they think. But, you know, the District Attorney's Task Force says, yeah, these things have come up. We've generally ironed them out. These are the kinds of neighborhood disputes that occur. So we're not seeing massive fraud. And we're also seeing virtually no evidence of intimidation. I really didn't see it anywhere. I ran into one poll watcher in an African-American ward, the 32nd ward in North Philly. He's a guy from the neighborhood, and the Republicans are finding poll watchers to go in and do as the process intends, to just be there and monitor and make sure that things are done in a fair and even-handed way, but haven't really seen anything major in terms of tampering or intimidation. That said, today's not over yet.
Right. Smooth sailing so far. Let's see what happens when the polls close by 8. Dave, thanks so much.
Sure thing.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. Let's turn next to WHYY's Kevin McCrory, who's been talking to voters in the Pennsylvania suburbs. Kevin, we sent you to check out reports of a polling place in Cheltenham, Montgomery County, where everyone was being asked for ID when voting. Now, that's even though Pennsylvania law only mandates asking for ID for a voter who's new to that polling place. Kevin, what did you learn when you got there?
Well, I went out and the poll watcher in charge said, you know, it's really a matter of ease of checking the record. So they are asking for ID. They weren't going to demand that you had to have an ID, but they just said it speeded the process up and it made, you know, the voting move quicker. So I think he's within the letter of the law there because he's not denying anyone the right to vote. But certainly people have complained. People complained today. People complained in the past. He has done this before. So it continues to be kind of one of those issues, one of those gray areas, how you play the voter ID question.
Kevin, you moved on from Cheltenham. You've been around Montgomery and Delaware counties today. When engaging voters in the much sought-after suburbs, what have you learned?
It seems to be a couple different storylines today. You have people on both sides of the political spectrum kind of holding their noses and voting for their candidate. You hear that a lot from both people who ended up voting for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, who you could tell weren't really that enthusiastic about it, but were more voting against the other person. You also saw a lot of people who typically vote Democratic, but for some reason just really felt like they needed to go against Hillary Clinton and vice versa. People who typically vote Republican who just came to because they couldn't stand him. So it's kind of been shocking to see that sort of flip-flop on both sides, but probably not that shocking since that's been a lot of what this election has been.
WHYY's Kevin McCrory on Newsworks Tonight. There's been a lot of focus on polling places leading up to the election, and in some cities, that includes supporting voters who don't speak English very well. Often there are gaps between the need for translation and interpretation at the polls and what has to be provided under federal law. Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty reports.
Normally I get off 5 o'clock every day, so it doesn't matter if it's election or not.
For Cesar Liriano, elections have been hectic for most of the 9 years he's lived in the city of Lebanon. Presidentials are craziest, but he's busy during the lower turnout local and gubernatorials, too.
So I get on, soon as they open the poll, I go and vote with my wife, and then I get prepared to be running from one poll to another place.
Lebanon's known for its sizable Latino community, so the city has translated ballot materials and interpreters at some polling places, but it's not a requirement under federal law. Basically, the government looks at the number of eligible voters with limited English proficiency who speak the same language. If it hits 10,000 or 5% of eligible voters, translation and interpretation requirements are triggered. Population thresholds are calculated at the county level. In Pennsylvania, 3 counties meet it, in each case for Spanish: Berks, Lehigh, and Philadelphia. That leaves a gap in places like Lebanon.
I think that the law works for the majority, and I guess that's appropriate in a lot of ways. More people feel like it's appropriate.
That's Hazel Diaz. She coordinates volunteers for the Lebanon Democratic Committee. In her home city, 12% of eligible voters have limited English proficiency and speak Spanish. Countywide, it's just 3%, comfortably under the federal threshold. It's a similar situation in 19 municipalities in Pennsylvania.
We have people on city council that have won by 11 votes. So every vote does really count.
Some of the volunteers Diaz is working with will be called on to interpret should the need arise on election day. Jerry Vadamala is director of the Democracy Program at the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund. He says having people who are associated with the political party serve as translators at polls can be problematic.
Right. And we've seen this in numerous elections. They oftentimes will be persuaded, or through language barriers, the person that's assisting, that is partisan, will oftentimes choose candidates that the voter themselves did not want to choose.
Vadamala prefers Lebanon County's other method of increasing bilingual support, recruiting students from the city's public high school.
That is a wonderful idea. That would be one of the best ways to eliminate almost all of the problems that we've encountered and observed in the last several elections.
Even in the three counties where federal law requires language support, officials and advocates acknowledge guidelines aren't fully specific, just say that reasonable steps must be taken. There's general agreement that ballots and voting machines must offer translations, for example, but there is still ambiguity about how to facilitate communication when there's a language barrier between poll workers and voters. Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station project. Still ahead, members of the Philadelphia music group The Roots help local residents get to the polls.
There's murals of us here in the city. Our name is on Broad Street in the sidewalk. So feel like that affords me just a little bit more influence.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. For listeners bemoaning the end of the election cycle, take heart and hop aboard the up-and-running 2017 New Jersey gubernatorial campaign. Our tour guide, Nick Acacella, editor, publisher, and writer for PolitiFacts NJ. Nick, thanks for joining us again on NewsWorks Tonight.
And thank you, Dave.
Well, let's focus on Phil Murphy. He has a very busy schedule. Let's see, at this hour, he is in Red Bank at a commuter stop.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. You know, we used to wait 48 hours before the next cycle began. Now, however, the cycles begin before the current one ends. So this one began about 3 weeks ago. The 2017 gubernatorial cycle began about 3 weeks ago, even before this was over. So it's no accident that Murphy's running around the state like, trying to hit as many Democratic opportunities as possible.
And although he doesn't have much name recognition, he has enough clout that he knocked Steve Sweeney out of consideration.
Oh, yeah. He knocked Steve Phillip out, the mayor up here of Jersey City. Sweeney realized he couldn't win unless Phillip was in the race, so he knocked them both out. A double Steve, we call that. Only two things matter in a primary, and that's the county lines and money, and Murphy has them both. So where is anybody going to go?
Yeah, but when it comes to how he amassed that money, some might find that it's a similar pedigree to former Governor John Corzine.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same company, but they're very, very different individuals in terms of their personalities. John Corzine had a great difficulty adjusting to the political backslapping and, you know, phony warmth of politics. And Murphy's very, very good. He can walk in a room and recognize people and slap them on the back and shake hands and hug people. He's really very, very good at this business.
And there's certainly recent precedent with across the Delaware River, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf with no political office experience. That would be the case for Murphy as well.
Sure, yeah. The only thing, he was an ambassador to Germany, and before he had served on a commission for Dick Cody when he was governor. But those are the only times his name has surfaced in the political arena. And, you know, these days, that's probably not a bad thing, because it's fewer things that they can throw negative ads at. And that's, you know, I think there's an advantage to being a novice. Although anybody who thinks that corporate politics is an easy game is, you know, wrong.
So what would it take for Wisniewski or Lesniak to emerge?
The second coming.
Even more so than for GOP, say, Citarelli or Guadagno?
Well, I mean, one of the problems is that almost everybody agrees that the next governor is going to be a Democrat. And this is what happens. This is what happens in this state. We get two-term Republicans followed by a Democrat every time. I mean, that happened with Tom Kaine. It happened with Christy Whitman. And it's going to happen again with Chris Christie.
So in other words, Tom Kaine Jr. just has to hang in there for four more years.
If that's what he's looking at, he's going to have to hang in, yeah, for another 4 years.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, sir. You stay well.
You too. Happy Election Day.
Thanks.
Nick Acacella, editor, publisher, and writer for PolitiFacts NJ. Transportation services like Uber, Lyft, and CarShare are offering free rides today to ensure as many voters as possible get to the polls. Some members of the musical group The Roots are doing the same. Drummer Questlove and singer Black Thought are in Philly today encouraging voting. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports.
It all started with the SEPTA strike. A local DJ and activist named Cosmo Baker was worried that a lot of Philadelphians would not be able to get to the polls and to work because the buses might not be running. So in just 24 hours, using a little more than social media, Baker had mobilized a 100-person army of volunteers. And even though the SEPTA strike did end and buses are now running, he pushed forward.
Between me and a few principals in this kind of guerrilla operation, we don't really have a name for this, we came up with logistics and infrastructure of how we can kind of make this work for getting people to polls.
Baker is a well-connected guy, and the band The Roots caught wind of his effort. Singer Tariq Trotter, also known as Black Thought, is from South Philadelphia, and he maintains a house here. Even though he doesn't live here anymore, he comes back every election day because this is where he is registered to vote. On this election day, he came back to pass out water and pretzels to people waiting in long lines at polling places and also to give hugs and post for pictures.
All of our civic duty is to vote, but we're not all, you know, on primetime television 5 nights a week. You know, there's murals of us here in the city. Our name is on Broad Street in the sidewalk. So feel like that affords me just a little bit more influence.
Black Thought is encouraging people to vote this year because, as he says, this is an election like no other, and also because he had the day off. He did not have to rush back to New York in the afternoon to tape The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. The Roots co-founder, Questlove, drove people to the polls in West Philadelphia. That's where he grew up. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, the presidency is also on the minds of visitors to the National Constitution Center. That's where a presidential costume contest was the ticket to free admission. Though the competition was slim, two perennial favorites showed up, along with members of their Girl Scout troop. Riley Decker came as George Washington. She chose Washington, quote, because he was our first president and the costume was on sale. Amelia Broadway was dressed as Abraham Lincoln, saying, he's my favorite president and he stopped slavery. She enjoyed dressing up as her favorite president, except for the beard. It's a little itchy, and it gets in my mouth. Well, could be. Honest Abe had the same problem. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Stay with us at 6:30 for a look at the day's business news on Marketplace. And then WHYY's election coverage gets underway at 7 with a special edition of Radio Times, followed by national and regional reporting from NPR and WHYY. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.